Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. Guy here. Voice getting better by the day, but we're not here to talk about that. I'm very excited to talk to a friend who I've known for many years in the work I do around the Pac-12, the Pac-12 Network, and SiriusXM. And I'm excited to have him because he's got great perspective on quarterbacks, on a lot of the quarterbacks in this draft, and great perspective on Kyle Shanahan. He stands still as a top 10 quarterback in the Pac-12 history books at Washington State. He's ninth all time in passing yards in the history of that league. When he left the Pac-12 in 2007, 2008 draft, he was fifth all time in touchdown passes. Offenses exploded, and Alex Brink is now top 20. He's 18th. As a pro, he was drafted in the seventh round by the Houston Texans, picked 223, the last QB of that Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco draft. It was Kyle Shanahan's debut season as an offensive coordinator, and he'd go on to play most of his professional career in the CFL. Now he is a quarterback coach, does it at a very high level, runs a couple of athletic training facilities in the Portland area called E4 Sports, and works with a ton of QBs, Elite 11 guys, and obviously covered all of these. So much of this draft is Caleb Williams, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and Cam Ward, who he watched a lot as the radio analyst for Washington State football, as he has been for several years. So he's a proud Coug and a really sharp football guy, and I'm happy he's here today. It is Alex Brink. Alex, thanks for being here, man.
What's up, guy? Thanks for having me, man. I'm probably the only thing is I'm a little miffed that this is the first time. We've known each other for so long, but like you said, a lot of meat on the bone here with some of these quarterbacks. There is. So I appreciate you having me.
There is. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the future, but you've got a solid position in the top 20 touchdown passes thrown in the history of the Pac-12. So
sure. Yeah. Maybe that might last forever. You know, maybe I'll be top 10 forever. If Washington State and Oregon State can't figure this thing out, we'll see.
So I know you got great perspective. There's so much stuff, like you said, a lot of meat on the bone. I think just the quarterback position, the development of the position, so interesting. As someone who does a lot of this NFL content and also covers college football, my line to people the last few years has always been like, if you talk to college football fans, there's going to be in any given year, like 8 fan bases that love their quarterback. Right. And then we look in the NFL and we go, well, there's only like 10 elite guys every year. You played the position, you coach the position. Is there just, no matter all the developments we make in brainwave monitoring and virtual reality, do you think there's just a finite number? Like there can only be 10 great quarterbacks in the sport every year? Or how do you view it? Can it be better?
Well, I think it could be better. I think, but I think it's out of the control of the quarterbacks. I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, the soapbox I'll stand on is that, like, you know, the quarterback position is so dependent on everybody else around them. And sure, there's a select few that can stir the drink, you know, a la Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Patrick Mahomes. But like the rest of them, I mean, they're so dependent on the supporting cast. Think Russell Wilson, you know, think about how that plays out. And a lot of it, again, is defense and running game. And then all these quarterbacks they have the physical abilities, like that's not it. And there's certainly a processing element and a mental side. But I think your point about, you know, there's only 8 or 10 guys that seem to really move the needle every year. Lots of times, 2/3 of those guys are dependent on the group around them, right? And the team that's been built around them. And you just see that play out constantly. It's so hard to build rosters in the NFL, and it's so hard to maintain those rosters year in and year out. So, you know, I think the quarterback play, if you just kind of said, hey, are quarterbacks as a whole more prepared and better than they were 10 or 15 years ago? I think it's a fair statement, top to bottom. But at the same time, I don't know that you're always going to get, you know, 32 elite quarterbacks or productive, high-level productive quarterbacks. Now, we can dive deeper, and I think there's a real issue with quarterback development behind the starters. right? Which is where you see the drop off, like this year when starters get hurt and backups come in, because there's really no method for developing these players. You know, my experience with Houston, with the Texans, my rookie year, I mean, I basically sat on my hands for a year, right? I was the third string guy. I was a practice squad guy, but the number two, he gets all the scout team reps because the starter's taking all the starter reps because there's so few reps to be had during the week. And so, you know, whether that's minor league football that's been popping up recently, some sort of development that is not the NCAA because college football is just a different beast than the NFL. I don't know what the answer is there, but there's no doubt that the development behind the starters is not good enough to create a quality product when some of those elite guys go down.
That's interesting. So like Josh Dobbs should be playing in the UFL right now with as a 49er, like my affiliated player.
Yeah, I think NFL Europe, but in the United States, whatever it is, some way for those players to play and then get called up and move through it. You know, that minor league system that baseball and basketball have with the G League, because what a quarterback can't do is just sit and watch. And you, every coach in the world, you know, oh, we can take the mental reps. You can learn off film. You can, it's like, you can't though. Like, you have to play. And so look, Josh Dobbs is good enough to start and win in the NFL. He showed it, but he's not good enough week in and week out to get thrown into the fire with limited reps in new systems, things he doesn't know, things he hasn't seen, and be expected to go 6-1 or 5-2, right? He's got to have more than that, and everybody does. They got to have more reps. And as young players, that's probably what I think guys miss out on, unless you're just uber special. Or I think the path that's shown to be really successful is you get in the NFL and you sit for 3 or 4 years and you really learn it, and then you become the guy.
Well, I mean, you're describing what we saw from two different sides of the coin play out with the Niners, right? Here's Trey Lance, who my miscalculation when they drafted him was, look at all this talent around him. It's a great situation. But it turned out there was so much talent that the expectations were really high. And sure, if you weren't ready to like win a Super Bowl or almost win a Super Bowl, then you weren't ready to play. So then you got Brock, who gets like no reps at all, right? He's the four guy when he shows up. Then he's the three guy behind Lance and Garoppolo. And he plays right away. And it just was such a stark contrast of
right,
what each guy was ready for. And, you know, there was no mechanism for Trey Lance to hang around for 3 years and do anything other than kind of sit and watch. And right, so he's gone.
Yeah. You, that situation was so interesting because, you know, by all accounts, Trey Lance athletically, physically, you know, as a player was ready, right? When he got drafted, when he came out, I mean, that's, you know, it's one thing that I think Kyle in general has been great at is, you know, evaluating quarterback talent, whether it's back to RG3 and Kirk Cousins in Washington, you know, and along the way, he's able to find it. Now, what's interesting is you think about these scenarios where he takes a high pick and then he takes a low pick, which is really pretty atypical, right? And in both cases, you could argue, not could. I mean, it's probably true that the lower pick ends up being the better of the two for whatever reason. And in the end, what I think is that, you know, with Brock, you know, Brock specifically, it's, you know, he's a real product of his environment coming through college, right? And one thing I think about back to my experience in that, you know, I got to play a lot, you know, I saw a lot of snaps, I saw a lot of things. And so by all accounts, I probably should have been a little more prepared for the NFL than I was. And I look at a guy like Brock Purdy and you hear him talk and his maturity and his story and his preparation. It's like he, you know, the whole way, it's not like he was dreaming of being in the NFL. He was preparing to be in the NFL, right? Like there's two different sides of that where like I could be a kid from Eugene, Oregon and be like, boy, I want to play in the NFL. It'd be pretty cool. And then all of a sudden you show up and you're in the NFL and you're like, uh-oh, like I'm in the NFL. Like, am I ready for this? You know, which feels a little bit more like my personal experience. Whereas, you know, some of these guys that are young players that come in nowadays, because the way the quarterback position is developed from, you know, grade school, middle school, high school through college, you know, there is this expectation of how you prepare, how you get ready, how you watch tape, how you understand offenses. And you really felt like, you know, Brock was ready for that. And that matched with Kyle's personality, which is all ball all the time, you know, really knee deep in it, you know, having a great understanding of football in general and the game. And that the way they meshed, I mean, that was really obvious from the get-go.
We'll find out, because there's a contract situation on the horizon with Brock. And the beauty is we get to watch him play out this year and you know, see what happens. But, you know, part of the debate is, because you see the Shanahan disciples around the league, is can you plug and play most guys or not? And I would imagine there are guys, there aren't a lot, but there are guys like you, a seventh round pick to a Kyle Shanahan team. And I wonder, like, do you think I could have done that? Or is there something unique about Brock, right? Like, is he just a good player, whether he's a seventh rounder or a first rounder or a fifth rounder playing for anybody else? But how do you, you know, I would imagine there's some personal thoughts on that. Like, man, should I be in my, Joe Flacco was in your draft class, right? Like,
yeah.
So how do you do that?
I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, I look back to my experience in Houston and, you know, this, I mean, not to get like super deep and personal, but there is some regret in the sense that I recognized right away how gifted Kyle Shanahan was as a coach. I mean, I sat in those meeting rooms. It was me and him and Matt Schaub and Dan Orlovsky and at one point Sage Rosenfels. And I remember watching him, you know, break down defense, design plays. He was designing this playbook. I mean, that was 2008. And it was the things that they're implementing now and some of the concepts and the way they've put the playbook in. I remember him talking about that. And you know who else was sitting at the desk? Mike McDaniel. Matt LaFleur were both on that staff. And so, you know, I look back and I'm like, gosh, like the coaching talent that was in that building that I was around and could have taken advantage of. And then the system and what it was. It was a little different back then. You know, Kyle's first year offensive coordinator, he really wasn't calling plays. Gary Kubiak was as the head coach. And, you know, and you know, I think Kubes was definitely calling the shots. So it was definitely a different situation. But, you know, there were moments, you know, where you see how gifted Kyle is, you know, in the way he prepares quarterbacks and the way he builds offenses. And now it's permeated throughout the league, right? With all the guys that are out there that have been a part of it. And whether it's Sean McVay or KOC in Minnesota, like it's those guys do something different for quarterbacks. So Brock Purdy is special. Like there's no doubt you don't walk into the NFL, no matter your situation, you don't walk into the NFL and just find success like that. If you're not special, but does the situation help? Absolutely. Like that offense has all the tools in the world. You got arguably the best back in the league, a fantastic offensive line. You know, for a quarterback, you can win in the NFL if you run the football and you play action pass. And that's how Kyle built that style of offense, is to run and play action pass. And that was it from day one. They wanted to be the Jake Plummer Denver Broncos, and they wanted to do it over and over and over again and repeat that success and figure out different ways to do it with motions and formations. And you just see that, right? So I think there's, to your point about, you know, whether it's me or guys around the league, everybody wants to play in the system because that system is so effective and helps quarterbacks so much. And what happened in football along the way, you know, kind of prior to this, was the expectation was that the quarterback should just like handle everything, like you get to the line of scrimmage and pull all the strings and be the puppet master. Well, that worked for a while until defenses caught up. And once defenses caught up and started doing their own puppet strings and starting pulling it different ways, and you watch NFL defenses now, and you know, they don't just play cover two. They've got different guys running from different spots to play the deep half, and then guys coming down into the hole. I mean, it's all different. And that changes everything for the quarterback, right? You can't do it the way you used to. And so that puts the control back into the coaches to get the team in the right plays, you know, execute the right personnel groupings and formations. And I think that's why guys like Kyle and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Mike McDaniel offensively, you know, are more successful. And the quarterbacks generally are more successful because of that.
You know, I didn't intend to talk about this. I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this, but you're hitting on something that is like the one of the big conversations right now among Niner fans, which is in the Super Bowl, the 49ers got beat on pressure on two big third downs, one that resulted, you know, one in overtime, one at the end of regular, the 2-minute warning, basically. And so there's a debate going on right now about whether or not Kyle Shanahan should give Brock Purdy more control at the line of scrimmage to ensure that they don't get beat in those spots again. So it sounds like you're saying one of the benefits of the system is that the quarterback doesn't really handle that at the line. But you do wonder if for this thing to evolve, if Brock does need to have actually some more responsibility at the line of scrimmage. What do you think about that?
It's a really fine line. I am of the I'm of the school of thought that you want to eliminate gray area for quarterbacks as much as possible, because gray area creates indecision. So one of the reasons a guy like Brock Purdy can be successful, because maybe he's not as physically gifted as some other guys in the league or some of his the other athletes that are on the field, is that when he steps on the line of scrimmage, he's so well prepared and he understands it so well that, you know, think about, I think it was the Super Bowl, he made a throw on a dig route where it was like he let the ball go and everybody's like, where's he throwing to? And out of nowhere, right, guy comes across the middle, high points it, and it was like, the talk was about the anticipation and the understanding. Well, you only make that throw if you know it's going to be there and you like really trust it. And if there's hesitation, you don't make that throw, or you make that throw and you throw an interception, frankly. And so I think the ability for coaches to eliminate gray area, put the confidence in the player that the play that got called, my coach believes in, who is arguably one of the best play callers in the league, so I'm going to trust in that play and execute it, you're going to be more right than wrong. But are there going to be situations where the other team makes a play because they're getting paid too, and you are in the Super Bowl? Like, yeah, like that's going to happen. And so I think you're playing that game. I think you open up a Pandora's box if you say like, hey, we're going to now let him have all this freedom. If that's the answer, right? Like, we're going to let him have all this freedom, and he's going to, you know, he's going to make all the changes and do all different things. You know, the other side of that coin is, when you look at Kansas City, right? Andy Reid has a lot of control over that offense also. But what he doesn't have control over is the ability of Patrick Mahomes to make off-schedule plays. And that's where the offense really gets expanded and goes next level. It's kind of the creativity. And that's probably where Purdy, although he showed he can be a good athlete, that's obviously not his game. And that's where you get stuck at this day and age in the NFL, is if you don't have the creativity off-schedule that some of these other players have, there are times when the defense is just going to flat beat you. That's just what it is. The pass rushers are too good. The DBs are too good. And so I think that's the conversation the Niner faithful are having, is like, you know, we're kind of living with what we got. And like, we got to hope that we're better on that day, which you weren't this year.
Yeah. Everyone's just trying to figure out like what, you know, can he become a $45 million a year, because that is just what quarterbacks do become, right? If they hang around long enough, they become $45, $50 million a year guys.
And I think the answer is like, if you go back and watch the tape, like he makes some anticipatory elite NFL, you know, touch throws into high pressure situations that like, you just can't, like guys don't just do that. You know what I mean? Like, Alex Brink doesn't walk in the NFL and do that. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? And any of these guys, like, there is something special. Like, there's something different, right? And he goes in the seventh because, you know, he plays at Iowa State. They're in the Big Ten. Like, yeah, he's a four-year starter and he's got some things to it, but like not elite production, not elite size and strength. Like, he's just a really high quality college football player. And then when you scrape it all away and you're kind of like, oh wait, this is like an elite competitor who started as a freshman who did, you know, you can start to, we can tell the story now, but when you're coming out of like the, you know, when you're coming, you know, out of the draft process, it's easy to talk yourself away from that guy. So, you know, if Brock Purdy was a third round pick and doing this, would we all be asking the same questions, or is it just cause he was a seventh round pick? Like, why is, you know, why?
I think it's cause he's short. I think it's cause he's short. Like, I think if Herbert was a seventh round pick by some wild, you know, somehow we'd be like, okay, that looks, actually that's what it's supposed to look like. Whereas I think Tua's like a top 10 pick, but he kind of looks like Purdy. And so I think people are going to be really slow to go like, okay, yeah, Tua, I'm buying this, you know? And I think correctly so. Like, I think it's like, I see some people in the live chat, I'm here to defend Alex, but they're like, no, Brock is creative. But I think what you're saying is at any given moment, the defensive coordinator is losing sleep over what Mahomes might do, even if the defensive coordinator makes the right call. It's not, you're not saying Brock is not athletic and not creative. You're saying Mahomes can solve.
He definitely is, but I'm talking about, you know, there's like a next level to that that changes games, like and changes Super Bowls, right? And you know, I would argue that Brock has not shown that level of it yet, right? Which is fine. Like, he's young in his career. My point is that, you know, you can break down defenses. You can break down defenses in a few different ways, right? You can do it off schedule with your creativity and athleticism and throwing ability on the run, like that sort of thing, you know, whether it's, you're thinking, Josh Allen, Lamar, however you want to think about, Mahomes, that sort of thing. You can do it with great offense, right? You can do it with great called offense and execution. And then you can do it kind of pre-snap at the line of scrimmage. And that's again, what you were talking about, where it went. Right. So, I think it's a really unique conversation. I think Brock Purdy is a fantastic test case. I would also everybody's gonna have to understand, the success for quarterbacks in the NFL is not linear, right? Like it's gonna go like this, and it's gonna be really hard that first time, Brock goes through, because he hasn't really had a really, really tough stretch, right? And so
he had a small one, but
and everybody killed him for it, wait till he does, because he will, like they all, like everybody does, you know what I mean? It happens.
And Josh Allen, last year, Josh Allen was getting killed.
Right. And so again, and even Mahomes for a little bit early in the season, even though everybody was, everybody blamed the receivers, rightfully so maybe, but there's going to be that. But in the end, if you let these players kind of get to their prime, his prime is when he's 28, 29, 30, think about that. What, 5 years from now?
Yeah.
Something like that. That's ages away. But if quarterbacks can get to that age, they're going to be really, they're going to be, I think, that's where they find the most success, is kind of in that window. But it's letting a quarterback get to that point in the NFL.
Yeah. All right. I want to, cause you got stuff to do today. I want to talk about a few of these college guys. Because in your role, obviously on the West Coast, coaching QBs, so you've seen these guys through high school, but also in your role as Washington State's radio analyst. We've got great prospects coming out of the last year of the Pac-12. And I love when people, I think one of the things that's interesting about Caleb, who's the consensus number one pick, and somebody said in the chat, Brock is the same height as Caleb, right? Where are you at on Caleb? It doesn't have to be, it's not about Brock Purdy. Where are you at on Caleb?
Sure.
Generational prospect, sure. Overrated. Where are you at?
Caleb Williams is special. I see it so many different ways. So, kind of for those that don't understand, so I've worked with the Elite 11 for the last 7 years, right? Elite 11 is, we see the top 20 high school quarterbacks in the country every year. We pick the top 11 of them. Something like of the last 15 number one draft picks, they've been, quarterbacks, they've been, Elite 11 finalists, things like that. We've seen the best of the best. And so my first experience was with Tua, and it was from the get-go, it was that is a top 10 NFL draft pick as a senior in high school. You just see it, right? Josh Fields, Trevor Lawrence, no doubt, right? And then there's other guys that you said special high school players, and maybe are going to be special college players. And you're kind of I don't know that, I don't know they have the mentality for it. I don't know they have it. Williams has you see these guys in situations when the lights aren't on and the cameras are off and they're away from it, and they're exactly what you would want in the franchise, right? They've got this competitive fire that's burning in them, right? They're not gonna let somebody win just to be nice about it, even if it's a game of horse when you're kind of on the basketball court just messing around, right? And you see them when they're around football, and they're he'll come back as a counselor to the Elite 11, which is the most, he could do whatever he wants. He could stand on the sideline and do nothing, and nobody would care, because it's Caleb Williams, right? He was the former Elite 11 winner. And he's mixing it up in there. He's throwing it. He's talking to the high school kids. He's coaching them up. He's asking the coaches for stuff, right? He wants it. He wants all of that. This kid loves ball. And then on top of that, yeah, he's not the biggest dude in the world, but I've seen very, very few people throw a football like he throws a football. He's got things, he's got the big hands that you have to have. He's got a huge arm, different arm angles. We've all seen that creativity. You can't make up the creativity. And I think he gets better when he gets to the NFL, because people are going to rein him in, but he's going to have to play more in the lines, right? He's going to have to kind of paint. He's going to have to paint on the paper, so to speak, because, one thing Lincoln Riley did is probably on purpose, but kind of let him have free reign. Do your thing, figure it out. You know what I mean? Right. We probably can't block it up well enough, so we need you to make it happen. The NFL is going to be great for Caleb Williams, because it's going to provide enough structure where he can be more on time. He can utilize his passing ability. And then, a la some of these other really athletic, gifted quarterbacks, get off schedule and make some big time plays. Because you just can't, there's nobody in this draft that throws the football like Caleb Williams. There's a lot of good passers in this draft class, but they don't throw like Caleb.
So you, like, you just hit on like the biggest criticism, right? Or at least the biggest question, which is, can he play on schedule? He can play pickup, yeah, but can he play on schedule? And you think he will be able to, that he'll be able to be accurate enough? And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. The answer is yes. The issue was he wasn't asked to, right? Like Lincoln Riley didn't ask him to. And so that, I think, to me is, you know, where you got to understand that, whether that was by design or what they wanted to do, you know, because like you watch that USC offense and like they wanted to run RPO screen game and kind of mixed like RPO pass game, or they wanted to take shots because they had speed. And it was like, if we can't take a shot, then Caleb will get us out of it with his athleticism. Like, you know, from like an on-time rhythm, more semi-traditional, call it, you know, pass game, like that's not what that offense was. And so he wasn't asked to do it. And I think, yeah, when he gets in there, he will be able to, because to me, that's, you know, he's got that ability to do it.
ButcherBox.com/ham and another special deal. Free for a year. You get salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips in every order for a year, plus an additional $20 off right now at ButcherBox.com/ham. Been telling you about it for years. Been eating it for years on a regular basis. Easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Always be prepared with meat in the freezer when you get ButcherBox.com/ham delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping. ButcherBox is offering you free for a year plus an additional $20 off either salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips in every order for free. Sign up today at ButcherBox.com/ham and use the code HAM to choose your free offer for a year plus get $20 off your first order. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app, because it's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action. While you watch your favorite players in sports, you just pick more or less on two or more player stats, and then the fun is on. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. It's really simple to play. You make your picks, submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. I'll do it at halftime of a basketball game, and I also have some season-long more or less picks on MLB homers. You may remember, I've got less on Ohtani homers this year. We'll see. And at halftime of your next NBA blowout game, just jump on and go, Steph Curry more than 11 points in the second half. It'll change the game for you. Download the Prize Picks app and use the code HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
What's up, everybody? It's your old friend, John Middlecoff. I'm here to tell you about our friends at Game Time. Here's what I need you to do. Go to your smartphone, download a little app called Game Time. Baseball season's in full swing. Oracle Park. Been there a million times. Never doesn't live up to the hype. Go get yourself some garlic fries, a brewski, maybe some ice cream. They have very good Ghirardelli ice cream there. And when you do that, promo code HAM. So download the Game Time app. Your first pair of tickets, promo code HAM, H-A-M, save $20. The A's only going to be in the Bay Area for the rest of this season. You probably can basically go for free. Just buy a pair of tickets to any baseball game. They also have comedy shows if you want to check one of those out, or concerts. Game Time app, promo code HAM, save yourself $20. We don't even need a thank you. Just hammer that promo code.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's talk about another guy. Who do we have up here next? Let's go Michael Penix. Michael Penix, very, very hot topic as it relates to this draft. There's a lot of varying opinions on him. What do you think? Like, what do you think
about Michael I was fascinated by his pro day. I mean, I've watched Michael Penix obviously a lot in the pack. And, you know, he wasn't really asked to do it, and it wasn't something that he probably had to do, but you just didn't see it. You know, the athleticism he showed at his pro day, you didn't see it show up on tape quite as much, right? I mean, just when you talk about in the rhythm, being asked to do it, you know, he's probably one of, if not the most prepared from a NFL, more traditional NFL style offense and footwork and things like that to step into, to step in kind of right away and make an impact. I really believe that he fits that mold really well. His command of the football, the way he can drive the ball downfield, and, you know, people talk about the rhythm path. He's shown that, you know, he has shown that for sure. And then you see his pro day where it's like, he's got this, a next level athleticism that, and you're like, is that going to come out? We're going to get to see that a little bit, you know? And, you know, maybe that was the injuries and things like that, that he kind of built his game around staying in the pocket and getting the ball out quick. But I think really highly of Michael Penix. I put him in probably like he's a top three quarterback for me in this draft class. Honestly, I think whoever takes him is going to be really, really happy. And I think that maybe, that may buck the trend a little bit, but I think it's hard to find guys from the college ranks that are as well prepared to step into the NFL in today's NFL as guys like Michael Penix.
Who's number two then for you? If he's top three, Caleb won.
I'm talking in general, I guess, yeah. But, I'm a little up in the air. Like, I really like Drake May coming out of college. He's had kind of a weird post-college draft process. It feels like the kind of like get knocked down, the CJ Stroud move, right? Like, some people are trying to knock him down to see if they can get him sort of thing. And so, like everybody else, you like fight that. And so I'm trusting what I saw on tape. I think to me, it's Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Penix. But I think it's a good draft class. I think there's a lot of hype behind it because there's a lot of need, and I'm really, really interested to see are the six or eight guys gonna like pan out that everybody thinks six or eight guys are gonna pan out.
There's also a lot of hype because like out of the COVID year, we've got guys that everyone is so familiar with, right? Like Michael Penix, Bo Nix, right? Bo Nix has been a name in college football for like half a decade, right? So it sounds like you got Penix ahead of Nix. Where are you at? Is Nix going to, what is he as a pro?
Yeah, I mean, I love Bo Nix. Like, again, like same thing, like Elite 11, watched him at Elite 11 right away. It was like, man, like this dude is, in that Elite 11 class, because again, you got like some COVID years along the way. It wasn't like the strongest Elite 11 group. And I remember kind of walking out of that feeling like, Bo Nix was a guy that could make it to the NFL. I think, he's a beneficiary of coming through, playing a lot of ball, maturing, playing the duration of his college career, ending at a place like Oregon that really fit his skill set really well. And they built that offense, to I think highlight his strengths, right? Like, I think you watch, what they did, and it was a lot of getting out of the pocket. It was a lot of protected throws, a lot of quick game stuff. They obviously had some elite talent. I love their receiver group and the way they fit together. They obviously ran the football with Bucky Irving really well. So I think for me, Bo Nix is a really nice player. I don't think he's a guy that goes top 10 in this draft class and like really makes an impact in the league. I could see him going in like middle rounds and sticking and being a guy and really, really moving into like having a role in the NFL. But I don't know that he's like got that elite top end.
Gotcha. So, but you think Penix is a first rounder? Nix probably will go in the first round, but that's a QB inflation thing. Okay. How about kind of a sleeper? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, in general, and it happens probably every draft class, there's like, but definitely this draft class, it feels like there's like heavy QB inflation, right? Like, I do feel in general that that's the case.
Okay. Coug, Cam Ward. You know, he had an interesting career because he came up with so much hype and was a lot of promise, and then always felt like it just never quite came together for him. It felt like it was always a little too off script, probably more off script than they wanted it to be. But his physical tools are pretty obvious when you see it. So what would be a good type of situation for him, you think?
Yeah, I mean, Cam's going to, you know, he's going to have to get in and develop for sure, right? Like, he's a guy that, you know, I think his transition from FCS ball to Power 5, you know, Pac-12 football, was a little harder than people anticipated. I think the speed of the game made a difference. I think he does do some great things in the pocket, but, you know, one of the things about when you're somebody that is, and this is like, you start to get really granular with it, but like, sure, you can make a lot of plays off schedule, but if you also turn the ball over a lot when you do that, then the risk reward doesn't always equate, right? And that's the one thing about, you know, some of these guys in the NFL that really do it, like, at a high level, like Mahomes doesn't really turn the ball over that much. Now, Josh Allen does at times, and that causes problems, right? Like, that's the thing. And so you have to, like, balance that out. And I think, you know, Cam showed that ball security was an issue at times. You know, he was a guy that they were trying to get him to play on time, and he struggled to play on time, right? It wasn't that he wasn't asked to. He was asked to, and he had a hard time doing it. And so I think that's going to be a big learning lesson for him as he kind of grows and gets better, because, like, the arm talent, he does have that, the strength in the pocket, the escapability, to really, you've seen some flash plays that, like, you just can't coach. Like, you're like, oh my goodness, like, that is unbelievable. And then, but the downside has been the understanding that that can't be every play. Like, there has to be moments where it's, you know, where it's on schedule in these offenses that ask you to do it. And, I think for Cam, like, that's been a little bit of a struggle.
All right. I have one more question. We have one question I want to pop up from somebody. Is there anybody out there, like, I'm not going to say another Brock Purdy in this draft, but like a mid to late round guy that you've worked with or you've seen? And if the answer is no, that's fine too. But is there like a sleeper QB out there that you just kind of like, or you think could be a good career backup? Just something. Give us a name if you have one.
I probably don't have enough depth of knowledge to like really feel comfortable like doing, you know, like,
okay.
I'm sure there is, but I probably don't have the answer.
You don't have, that's fine. That's fine. All right. Here's a question. From BN Swab said, question for Brink. What percentage of success for QBs is mental, physical, supporting cast, if you could put a percentage on those three things?
Sure. You know, I think the physical side of it's probably the least amount of it. So call it, you know, like, I would say call it like 20%. That's why you've seen like the physical mold of a quarterback vary like relatively. But you know, across the history of the NFL, right? Like, it forever was like, you got to be 6'4" and you got to do this. And like, it's just not the case, right? Like, and that changes as offenses change, but I think forever and always, the physical side will be a little bit less. You have to have a base level of physical talent. Like, there just has to be like, once you get past the base, then it's the other things you're talking about. That mental part, you know, really matters, because, you know, it's people talk all the time about processing now, and that's a very common thing. The thing, I came across this and I thought it was fascinating when I'm working with quarterbacks, and there's this theory in the Air Force called the OODA loop. And so the idea is OODA, and what it is you're trying to observe, so see something, right? If you're a fighter pilot, you got to orient to what that is, you got to decide what you're going to do, and then you got to act. Well, the OODA loop happens like this. It's like how fast you observe, orient, decide, act. And so what they do with fighter pilots.
It's a circle, just for people listening. You're saying it's a circle.
Yeah, it's a circle. Yeah, it's a circle. And so what they do for fighter pilots is they're trying to create that loop and close that loop as fast as possible, right? And so in the NFL, that's what processing is, right? Like, I have to observe what the defense is. I have to orient to my play to that. Now guys are moving. Now it's blitz. Now I'm going to decide to throw to the backside. And then I got to act, which is the actual physical ability of throwing the football. And so I think when people start to like understand that piece of it versus like, oh, you just got to recognize it's cover two and throw the ball. Like it's so much more than that. That mental side skyrockets to that probably 50% if I were to put a number on it. And then I do think that the supporting cast side is a 30%. It's more than the physical side because, you know, you could be not the best player in the world, but like you could be a really gifted player and really smart and all the things. And like, if you just don't, if there's just not guys around you, like you don't have a chance, you know, obviously if you're blocked, like you're in trouble. But even more than that, like if your offense is designed well, and this is where I think people, you know, there's sometimes a disconnect. If your offense isn't designed well and designed in a way, and goes back to our previous conversation about, you know, really what Kyle and that system does well, you know, to help the quarterback, then you're just not going to find the level of success consistently. And so again, that ability to run the football effectively, or have some version of running the football, it could be quick passing game, screen game, that sort of thing. You know, I think that matters. So I think, you know, if again, 50% mental, 30% supporting cast, and then 20% physical, because as long as you have the base physical tools, then the other stuff you can get away with.
So where are you at? Like, are you optimistic about some of these cognitive tests and trainings that are out there? The CJ Stroud one was a big one, right? The S2, I think it was called, that became controversial. Like, do you think that can be done? Can you measure cognitively and predict guys, or is that, do you think there's a lot of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of work being done on it. And I think there's, you know, I know folks that had worked with the Elite 11 that are, you know, try to take that data. You know, you got to get enough data, right, to be able to truly understand if you can, you know, if you can kind of glean from that, you know, some sort of predictive capabilities. I think it's really hard because I think when you talk about like cognitive processing, you know, I think also some of it is the you're kind of just psychological makeup, right? Like it's like your competitiveness, your drive, like your ability to do it, because it's not like you also have to do it when you're hurt or when, you know, you're like a little banged up. You have to do it when like you're coming off a big play and you're like super jacked. Like there's things that change the mental side of it and the emotional side of it. And it's not just like, oh, I got to go diagnose coverage and like execute and throw. Like there's a million inputs coming in at one time. That's why I think it's so challenging because like you don't understand that, right? Like I think things like TJ Stroud's success and Brock Purdy's success, although different, you can trace back to like more so when you think about like who they are as people and what they went through to get to that point, right? Like TJ Stroud's story is well documented, right? Like with his family situation, what he went through in high school, coming up through it all, like then the six, you know, kind of underdog mentality and then gets this success. And you can see like his appreciation and his gratitude for where he's at leads to the hard work. And then he's got that physical talent. I think Brock Purdy's the same, although different, right? His way of getting there. And it has led to this gratitude. And I think those guys that make it through and have been through those type of challenges end up being more successful players in the end, because like quarterback's not a position you can take for granted. Like you have to play with a certain edge and chip. And I think guys that have been through something different end up being more successful, frankly.
All right, Alex, you got to go, but thanks for making time, man. This was fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, I threw a lot of questions at you, but you had a lot of good takes. So thanks, brother.
We should do it again. I'm happy. Good. Thanks for everybody out there that jumped in the live chat too. That's very cool. Thank you all.
Yeah. And if you're in the Portland area, go check out E4 Sports. Even you don't have to be an elite quarterback. You can have a kid playing baseball or some other sport. Go check out what Alex is doing in the Portland area. E4 Sports. All right, Alex. Thanks, brother. Good talking to you, man.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Okay. Bye.
There is Alex Brink. For those of you watching live who didn't catch and I'm going to keep going here. So I'm just going to remove you and you can hang up. So there he goes. But Alex had a great college career and now is a quarterback coach and does Elite 11 stuff. And he's an analyst. He's the Washington State radio analyst. So he got to see all those Pac-12 guys. So that was fun. And over the years, I've texted him a lot about Brock. And I don't, we got into a little bit. I don't know if it was totally clear, but I think it was, but I'll just repeat it. He was drafted by Shanahan in the seventh round in Houston, and he spent a year there with them and then went on to the a little bit more time with Houston and then went to the CFL. So I always think he's got great perspective, and I text him a lot about football, and he's got some he's got some good takes. So there were some of you guys had questions that we didn't have time to get to, but hope you enjoyed it. And you know, gave you a little more clarity. I thought it was interesting, you know, what he said about Knicks. He likes Bo, but you can like guys at different levels. And he said, I think he's a middle round guy. He likes Penix as a first round guy. And what was the other note I had here? Obviously likes Caleb. Not, as you could tell, like not super high on Cam Ward, needs a place to go develop. Yeah, that was fun. A lot of you guys had some comments in here that I don't know. I wasn't screening as I went through. I will tell you that yesterday, this is Thursday. And if you're watching, great. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel. If you're listening on the podcast, awesome. I was going to pull up some video here from the 49ers local pro day yesterday, if I could get it up here in time. I went out there and watched. There wasn't, for those of you watching, you'll see some of this. Wasn't a lot of elite talent, I would say. It was tough because the quarterbacks, you had one who was a local pro day guy, Chevin Cordero, who played at San Jose State, and then Kellen Mond was the other. A few interesting players. I know I was talking to Larry Kruger. He likes Austin Jones, the Stanford running back who finished his career at SC. The tight end position, I don't think they found a tight end out there yesterday. It was interesting to see Matthew Sindrick, who played center at Cal. Not a lot of offensive linemen. They're all doing individual drills. But Matthew Sindrick out of Cal, I wonder if he would be an interesting guy. And then a guy that I talked to yesterday that I like because I followed his career, and he's just a really productive player, is Ron Stone Jr. out of Washington State, whose his dad played in the NFL for a decade plus. And he had a long career at Wazoo. You know, he was like a five-sack guy as a junior, had a productive career, then came back, was banged up as a senior. So he comes back for his kind of that super senior year last year and had a really good year. So, you know, he's an all-around guy. He's a high IQ guy. He's a high character guy. He's kind of this, you know, we talk about like legacy guys like Jerry, Brendan Rice or Frank Gore Jr. or even Terrell Owens' son, Tariq Owens was out there yesterday. And actually, let me put up, you know, I would put that video up, but it has audio on it and it'll kind of disrupt things. But I did post video for those of you listening. I did post like 90 seconds of a bunch of different routes by Tariq Owens, T.O.'s son, who was out of Missouri State on the YouTube channel. So you can go watch that. But, you know, Ron Stone Jr. kind of also has that same sort of understanding of what it means to be a pro. Dad was a pro. But I think that's the type of guy who would make sense in a Niners camp, and maybe he could add some depth for them, would be a hard worker. You know, I'd be curious what they thought of Patrick McMorris, who's a safety who had played at San Diego State, older guy out of Cal. But they're just, you know, there was not a lot of elite type talent out there yesterday. And, you know, that's probably tied, I think, to the fact that you rely heavily on Stanford and Cal probably to produce guys for a local pro day. And Stanford and Cal have not, you know, they've not been great the last couple of years, and they've lost guys. Stanford in particular has lost players through the transfer portal. You get the extra year of eligibility because of the COVID year. Players can go somewhere else. Stanford is not good the last couple of years, and Stanford graduate school is hard to get into. So if you have another year of eligibility, say a fifth year of eligibility, you've already played four and you want to continue your college career, and you don't get into Stanford graduate school, or you want to go somewhere else, it's a good opportunity. You got your Stanford degree. Now you can go play offensive line at Michigan, right, as a couple guys did. So I think that's part of the reason why we saw a depletion in the 49ers' local pro day talent. I think in the coming years, we'll see more back, some of it from Cal. It'll be interesting. Jaden Ott, you know, he might be too good of a prospect next year, the running back at Cal, to be a part of the local pro day. But I do think we'll see more talent again at the Niners local pro day. But I don't know. I don't know that we – now the coaches were out there. They were out there watching. Maybe there'll be a guy or two that ends up in Niner camp from the local pro day. But I don't know that we'll see much. So, all right. That's that for this show. Hope you guys enjoyed Alex Brink. Good perspective. You know, I got friends that I want to start bringing on this channel. I've already done a little bit, like with Jeff Schwartz, people that maybe are not part of, not maybe, people that are not part of necessarily the if you watch a lot of Niner content or you listen to a lot of Niner content, part of that ecosystem, but people that have really good takes, good opinions, guys that I've worked with, guys that I text with, guys that I talk to, and I think are interesting. You know, I appreciate you giving them a space to come and give you a chance to hopefully be impressed and learn something and give me a chance to bring people on and not have it just be, you know, just Guy Haberman all the time. So I hope you enjoy it and that there'll be more of it. And if you do enjoy it, share it, hit that like button, definitely subscribe to the channel. If you're listening to the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, 5 stars, but also leave a question. And that's I'll pull quite, I will continue to pull questions from the Apple Podcast reviews as a way to drive you to do that and reward you, say thank you for people that take the time to do that. All right, I'm jumping out of here, but good seeing you guys today, and we'll talk soon. Later.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.